This message, titled Selfish You from James chapter 4 verses 1 through 3, was preached at Winchester Reformed Presbyterian Church in Winchester, Kansas. For more information, visit us at winchesterrp.com.
Brothers and sisters, we began last week looking at what can really be called James's spiritual diagnosis of a significant problem. James, as we have seen in the months that we have spent here in this letter, James is a faithful pastor. And as a faithful pastor, James is not satisfied to simply describe certain problems, but James does the difficult, often uncomfortable, but loving work of not merely describing problems as they might exist out there, but doing the hard work to diagnose those problems as they actually exist right here. And James, in this letter, as we have had occasion to see with the blessing of the Spirit, has been concerned with what a true devoted service to God looks like in the Christian life, knowing that our hearts are pulled in many directions to not serve God, to not be devoted to Him the way in which we should. And as James in this letter really meditates on a pure and devoted service to God, those of you who are familiar with this letter will know that he really draws throughout this letter three big themes. The first being that a devoted service to God is going to express itself in compassion. Secondly, that a devoted service to God means that you and I will bridle our tongues. We will be very careful with the way in which we use our words. And the third big theme for James in this letter, as he instructs us about devoted service to God, the third big theme is this, that we need to keep ourselves unstained by this world. And as we come to this portion of James's letter, we have seen that James is diagnosing the third of these. He is helping us come to terms pastorally, but forcefully. He is helping us come to terms with the worldliness that still exists within us. And again, as we cross this threshold again this morning, I want to emphasize again how important this is. James, together with the whole of the Bible, knows and teaches us that this world, as it presently exists, this world is not our home. As Christians, we are pilgrims. As Christians, we are sojourners who are merely passing through this present world. And James knows that one of the greatest threats to our devoted service to God as we pass through this world is that this world would corrupt us, that this world would have a staining effect upon us. The imagery, as we have seen, that James envisions these things, if we can put it this way, James envisions this world like a cloud of pollution. A cloud of pollution that tends to stick to us as we pass through it. And James wants us to live in this world, but to live as those who will not be polluted by this world. James is telling us that a pure devotion to God, brothers and sisters, a pure devotion to God is not showing up to church on Sunday just to leave here and go out into the world to be just like and to look just like the world, to be stained by it. But a pure devotion to God means that we will guard ourselves against the pollution of this world. And James here is diagnosing this worldliness. James is diagnosing it, and he is saying in no uncertain terms that unfortunately, more often than not, the world has stained us. The world has corrupted us. The world has polluted us, and perhaps more than we can even begin to imagine. And so in spiritually diagnosing this significant problem, Dr. James, if we can call him that, Dr. James first took up, as we saw last week, who it is that is infected by this worldliness. And James says, it's us. It is the people of God. It is those who have been brought forth by the word of God, as James has identified it. It's those who are brothers, even beloved brothers. It is you and I, the people of God, who are often infected by worldliness. James says here in verse 1 of chapter 4, what causes quarrels and what causes fights among you? And then we saw, as James gives this spiritual diagnosis, where this infection is, where this sickness, so to speak, what spiritual system in our spiritual bodies it invades. And James says in these opening verses of chapter 4 that this worldliness infects, what does it infect? It infects our passions and our desires. The word that James uses for passions, as we saw, is the word for pleasures. James is saying it is our pleasures and it is our desires that are infected by this world. And with clinical precision, James continues to diagnose worldliness. And so picking up on that again this morning, I want to continue with James's spiritual diagnosis. And so picking up on that theme, I want to focus first this morning, upon the sickness itself. Upon the sickness itself. I want to do a little bit of work very briefly here, connecting again what James says here in chapter 4 to what James has already written. If you look back at chapter 3, verse 15, James is contrasting two different kinds of wisdom. James is contrasting the wisdom that he calls a wisdom that is from above. A wisdom that is from above. And he contrasts that with a wisdom, as he says in verse 15, a wisdom that is earthly, a wisdom that is unspiritual, and a wisdom that is demonic. And he is saying, here's the reality. There is a kind of wisdom at work in this world that is earthly, it is unspiritual, and it is demonic. And it attacks, it infects our desires. It attacks and it infects our pleasures. And as it does that, James diagnoses for us what the result of that is. What it is that is produced when this earthly, unspiritual, demonic wisdom has its way in our hearts as it attacks our desires, as it attacks our passions and pleasures. What is the sickness that is produced? Well, what James says here in the first three verses of chapter 4, in diagnosing this sickness can really be summarized in a single word. And the single word is this: what is produced when the wisdom of this world infects our pleasures and our desires, what is produced in a single word is selfishness. It produces selfishness. When worldly wisdom that is all around us, that wisdom on which our culture and our society, the entertainment industry and our educational institutions, that wisdom that shows itself in every corner of society that exalts itself over Jesus Christ, when that wisdom meets in our hearts our pleasures and our desires, it stirs up selfishness. And of course, if you're familiar with the letter and the context, this is not something that comes out of nowhere, is it? Again, if we look back at chapter 3, beginning in verse 13, James says, "Who is wise and understanding among you? By his good conduct, let him show his works in the meekness of wisdom." And then what does James say in verse 14? James says, but if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast and be false to the truth. This is not the wisdom that comes down from above, but is earthly and spiritual, demonic. For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there will be disorder and every vile practice. James has already told us, here is what is produced in our hearts by worldly wisdom. What is produced in our hearts is bitter jealousy, it is selfish ambition, it is selfishness. And James, once again, James with clinical precision diagnoses and draws this out for us. He draws this out for us, this sickness of selfishness. He draws it out for us in a number of ways here in verses 1 through 3. The first way that he draws it out, and I want you to notice from what James writes, is what we might call our self-inability. What do I mean by that? Well, look at what James writes in verse 1. What causes quarrels and what causes fights among you? Is it not this, that your passions are at war within you? Again, the word there for passions is the word pleasure. And James is saying, here is a reality in the Christian heart. Here is a reality for the Christian life. Your passions, your pleasures, James says, they are at war within you. And as James says that, as James writes that, brothers and sisters, James is identifying something for us. He's identifying this, that you and I, even as Christians, even as those who have been born again by the word of truth, you and I so often have an inability to restrain and constrain ourselves. We have an inability to restrain ourselves. And James puts this in warlike imagery. Your pleasures, he says, your pleasures are at war within you. This isn't a skirmish. This isn't a boxing match. This isn't just a fist fight. James uses warlike imagery to say, here's what's going on in your heart. In your heart, a war is being waged. Your passions and your pleasures are battling within you. Unseen from your eyes, but felt by every child of God, there is a war raging in our hearts. And we have an inability to stifle that. We have an inability to constrain and restrain these sinful pleasures. In many ways, what James is saying here, in a slightly different way, is exactly what the Apostle Paul writes in Romans 7. Maybe you remember in Romans chapter 7, Paul is giving, he's giving a spiritual biography of himself. And in Romans 7, you remember perhaps, Paul says, you know, the things that I want to do, those are the things I don't do. And all the things that I don't want to do, those are the things that I do. And Paul is recognizing there's this conflict within his own heart. He doesn't do what he wants to do, and he does those things that he doesn't want to do. And Paul, in Romans 7, verses 22 through 23, Paul says this, and it captures so perfectly the reality of our hearts. Paul says, I delight in the law of God in my inner being. But Paul goes on to say that even as he delights in the law of God, he says, another law is waging war against the law of my mind and making me captive to the law of sin that dwells in my members. O wretched man that I am, who will free me from this body of death? Who will free me? What Paul is saying is what James is saying. We have an inability to free ourselves from ourselves. We have an inability to rise above the sinful passions and pleasures of our hearts. We cannot constrain ourselves. We cannot restrain ourselves. And brothers and sisters, as Christians in this world, this is where we need to be so careful. Because we live in a world that is preaching a message not of self-restraint. We live in a culture, in a society that is saying, don't restrain yourself. Don't control yourself. Give in to every desire. Give in to every passion. Give in to every pleasure. We live in a culture, we live in a society that continually gives us the message, embrace the real you. You be you. Live your truth. You do you. And James is saying, God forbid that we should do that. God forbid. There's a tremendous inability in ourselves to overcome ourselves. And the message of Scripture and the message of the gospel is not you do you. It's don't do you. But exercise and learn to practice in this world, self-control. You know, if it's ever struck you in Titus chapter 2, Paul gives all kinds of instruction for different age groups and different genders in the church, to the old men and the old women and the young women and the young men. And he gives different instructions. Here's what you should give yourself. If you're men, here's what you should do. And if you're older men, here's what you should do. If you're women and you're older women, here's what you should do. And younger women should do this. And younger men should do this. And when you read that list of things that Paul encourages every gender and every age in the church, you know what the one similarity is between all of them? Paul says, all of you learn self-control. Learn self-control. Learn to bring about the fruit of the Spirit, which is found in self-control. As the Apostle Peter said in his first letter, 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 11, abstain. He says, abstain from the passions of the flesh, which wage war against your soul. So we have this self-inability. James draws this selfishness out in another way, and it's this. Not only this self-inability, but self-entitlement. Self-entitlement is the wisdom of this world works upon our desires and our pleasures. It produces in us, the sickness it produces is that of self-entitlement. Look as James says this. In verse 1, is it not this, that your passions are at war within you? And then in verse 2, you desire and do not have, so you murder. You covet and cannot obtain, so you fight and you quarrel. Paul says that this is true of those who are Christians. This is true of people in the church, beloved brothers. You covet. You covet. And of course, if you're familiar with the Bible, you know, I hope you know, how important, how big, how significant this little word is that James uses here, you covet. In Exodus chapter 20, we have the summary of God's moral will for our lives called the Ten Commandments. What's the tenth commandment? The tenth commandment is, you shall not covet. Coveting is a sin there in the Ten Commandments that is named alongside. Think of what it's named alongside of. Murder. Adultery. Stealing. Lying. Coveting. And God has said, here is some of the most basic, some of the most foundational commands for the Christian life. You shall not covet. And James says, but that's exactly what happens when worldly wisdom meets your desires and your pleasures. You covet. And friends, we have to understand how serious this is. How serious it is to want those things that other people have that you do not have. This is a sin, if we can call it that. This is a sin that is so respectable in our world today and in many churches, to simply be a coveting people. But we have to understand how serious it is. The Apostle Paul in Colossians 3 says that covetousness is idolatry. It is idolatry. Jesus himself in Mark chapter 7 verse 22 tells us that it is covetousness that makes us unclean. Paul again in Ephesians chapter 5, beginning in verse 3, says this to the church of the Ephesians. That covetousness must not even be named among you, as is proper among saints. Paul is saying this sin of covetousness is so dark and it is so unholy, it's not even, in a sense, worthy to be named in the presence of those who are a holy people. And Paul goes on in Ephesians 5. To say that those who do covet, there is, he says, this is from the Apostle Paul, those whose lives are characterized by covetousness, Paul says in Ephesians 5, will have no inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and of God. Or maybe you remember again in Romans chapter 7, in that spiritual biography of the Apostle Paul. Do you remember the sin that first really convicted Paul of his need for the gospel of Christ? It was covetousness. That's what he says in Romans chapter 7. He says, I didn't know what it was to covet until the law came and said, you shall not covet. And Paul says, when that law came, when that command from God came, he said, I thought it would give me life. He said, but that law came in all of its power. And it wasn't life to me. It was death to me. Because I realized how covetous I was in this life. And Paul says it's in that moment, for the first time in his life, he is spiritually slain. Completely undone. All by the awareness of what a heart of covetousness he had. It seized the opportunity and it killed him. And here's the thing, brothers and sisters. Covetousness thrives. Covetousness thrives on an attitude of self-entitlement. That's where covetousness is found. Covetousness is found, isn't it? When you look at something that belongs to someone else, you say, I want that. More than that, what you are saying is, I deserve that. I have a right to that. I am owed that. I deserve that in some way, in some shape, and in some form. And we live in a society that promotes, in every advertisement you see, the sin of covetousness. You deserve it, and you are entitled to it. And James is saying, here's what happens when worldly wisdom comes. It produces in us a self-entitlement, a certain covetousness. And that can be expressed, in a thousand different ways in our lives. You think about the way, for instance, in Romans chapter 12, where Paul is talking about, you know what, you don't have a right to seek vengeance. Because God has said, vengeance is mine. Why does Paul say that? He says that because we think we are entitled to seek vengeance and revenge in this life. Or you think about Paul's instruction to the Thessalonians in 2 Thessalonians 3, where Paul says, by apostolic command, those who are not willing to work, don't get to eat. Paul is undermining this attitude of self-entitlement. If you're not willing to work, you don't get to eat, you need to earn your living. You think about the self-entitlement that Paul addresses in Philippians 2. When he tells you and he tells me that we are to consider others we are to consider others before ourselves. Their opinions, their preferences, their conscientious scruples. We are to have the humility to consider others before ourselves. We are not entitled, first and foremost, to all of our own self-expression. But James tells us that's exactly what happens. That's exactly what happens. But not only this self-inability and this self-entitlement, but another angle of this sickness we call selfishness that James emphasizes here is it's the selfishness of self-indulgence. It's the selfishness of self-indulgence. Look at what he writes in verse 3. You ask and do not receive because you ask wrongly to spend it on your passions. To spend it on, again, the word there, on your pleasures. That's what you want to do. You want to receive everything simply so you can spend it on yourself. You know, it's interesting, in today's church world, to be called a Pharisee is usually extremely pejorative. Nobody wants to be a Pharisee. Do you know that this is one of the sins that marked the Pharisees from all others? In Matthew 23, verse 25, Jesus looks, and this is when he's denouncing the Pharisees and the scribes, and he says, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, you're whitewashed tombs." And Jesus says, on the outside, you look really clean. You look really put together. You look like you've got everything ordered and right. And in Matthew 23, verse 25, he says, "Your whitewashed tombs, on the outside you look put together, but," he says, "on the inside you are filled." You are filled with self-indulgence. You just indulge yourselves at any expense. He's saying, in a sense, and we don't think about this when we think of Pharisees, they're pleasure seekers, seeking all their own pleasures. Maybe the imagery from Jude will strike us this morning. Jude is calling out false teachers in the church. And he characterizes them in all kinds of interesting ways. You're waterless clouds. I don't know what a waterless cloud is. It's a contradiction in terms. He says, not only are you waterless clouds, you're trees in late autumn who are twice uprooted and fruitless. What's a fruitless tree in autumn? It's a useless tree. And as Jude very colorfully depicts these people that are in the church, he says this in verse 12 of his letter, "You are shepherds who feed yourselves." What is a shepherd that feeds him? He's a contradiction in terms. A shepherd doesn't seek to indulge himself, but to feed the flock. Well, that's directed at Jesus' words are directed at scribes and Pharisees, and Jude's words are directed at false teachers in the church. Lest we think too highly of ourselves, self-indulgence is near to all of our hearts. We're obsessed. We are obsessed with indulging ourselves. And James says, here is the sickness that invades your heart. This is the sickness that invades your heart, my heart, Kyle's heart. It's selfishness. Selfishness. And secondly and briefly this morning, not only the sickness, but the symptom. The symptom. You know, in the medical world, I'm not a medical professional, but I think we all know enough of the medical world to be able to say this. In the medical world, we diagnose diseases and infections by certain signs and symptoms, don't we? Why do we do that? We do that because sicknesses and diseases show themselves. Sickness and disease oftentimes, maybe not all the time, but oftentimes, if you want to think about it in personality terms, disease is extroverted. It loves to show itself. It loves to manifest itself. It's not content. Can we put it in those terms? Almost a personification. It's not content. Diseases are not content to stay hidden. When somebody has heart disease, we know that there are telltale signs and symptoms of heart disease, whether it's shortness of breath, whether it's swelling of legs, whether it's rapid heartbeat. Diseases, sicknesses, love to show themselves. And that's where James goes here. James tells us here that this sickness of selfishness that is produced in our hearts when we reject godly wisdom and live by the wisdom of this world, James says, oh, that sickness of selfishness, that sickness loves to show itself. It doesn't want to stay hidden. It doesn't want to just be below the surface, unseen by everyone else. But James says, your selfishness loves to show itself. And it hates being hidden. And how does selfishness show itself? Well, James says here, really, there's two telltale signs. There's two major symptoms, and both of them have to do with our relationships. The first relationship is a horizontal relationship. In verses 1 and 2, what causes quarrels? And what causes fights among you? Is it not this, that your passions are at war within you? You desire and do not have, so you murder. You covet and cannot obtain, so you fight and quarrel. You see what James is saying? James is saying the selfishness of your heart that breaks forth, it affects the horizontal relationships you have in this life. The sickness of selfishness that invades our hearts, it shows itself in quarreling, in fighting, in murder, in fighting, and in quarreling. James sandwiches those together. What causes quarrels and fights among you? You murder, and so you fight and you quarrel. And maybe I don't need to say it this morning, but maybe it's worth saying simply this morning. The Bible does not imagine argumentativeness as a virtue. Being a quarrelsome person is not the fruit of the Spirit. There are times as Christians we need to contend. There are times as Christians that we need to destroy every lofty thought that exalts itself above Jesus Christ. But most of the time, what we do is not that. And you and I ought to have a deep, deep self-suspicion. When we find ourselves engaged in quarrels and we find ourselves engaged in fights, these are not things that the Bible praises. In fact, you could go through the scriptures. Proverbs 20, verse 3. Wisdom teaches us, it is an honor for a man to keep aloof from strife. But every fool will be quarreling. Paul tells Titus, a young evangelist in Titus chapter 3, to have nothing to do with quarreling. Why? Because it's foolish. And Paul goes on to tell Titus, not only is it foolish, it's unprofitable and it's worthless. It's without value. How many of you have ever engaged in a fight with your spouse and at the end of the day you sit down and you go, well, that was a really worthwhile fight? Our egos say that. Well, I'm really glad I got to say what I wanted to say. But if we're honest about it, how many times when we engage in quarreling and bickering and arguing with one another, do we pat ourselves on the back and say, that was a day well spent. I'm so glad that I quarreled. And this is Paul's point to Titus. It's unprofitable. It's worthless. And Paul goes on to tell Titus in strong language, those who engage in these things are self-condemned. Or think of what it is that Paul tells Timothy in 2 Timothy chapter 2, that to be a quarrelsome person means you're foolish. To be a quarrelsome person means you're actually ignorant. And Paul goes on to say in those words that of quarrelsomeness and of continual argumentativeness, that there's no good. And Paul tells Timothy when the pulpit becomes a place of just arguing, Paul actually says you ruin your hearers. And you see, this is what James is saying. James is saying, here's the result of our selfishness. The result of our selfishness is that we create, me, myself, and I, create fights and quarrels among those I am called to love. And James, with his own flavor and his own force, adds here, not simply quarrels and fights, but there in verse 2, you desire and do not have, so you murder. Not because James is writing to a church where a bunch of people are being murdered in the pews, but because James understands, brothers and sisters, that fighting and quarreling grow on the same tree as murder. These are two fruits from the tree of selfishness. These are two fruits from the tree of selfishness. The selfishness that leads you to bicker and to argue and to quarrel with your spouse, with your children, with your friends, with your coworkers, with the people around you. The same selfishness that does that to you is the selfishness that causes people to murder others. How serious that is. James in chapter 3 tells us, doesn't he? You remember how he says it. That we use our tongues to curse those created in the image of God. And James is now saying your selfishness will cause you to kill and murder those created in the image of God. And James says that's the symptom. You know selfishness exists in your heart because of the fights and the quarrels around you. How many churches have been shattered by people with fighting spirits? How many marriages have been burdened and bruised because of quarrelsomeness? How many siblings have been turned against one another because of constant bickering and arguing? Selfishness has slain its thousands, even its 10,000s. And James says, here's the symptom in the horizontal relationship. But James says there's another symptom, a tall tale symptom that we're only briefly touching on this morning and we'll return to. It's not only a horizontal symptom, but James says there's a vertical one too. There is something here about your relationship with God himself. James says in verse 3, you ask, or actually back in verse 2, you do not have because you do not ask. You ask and do not receive because you ask wrongly to spend it on your passions. How do we know here James is going from the horizontal to the vertical? We know if you remember this letter, because James in chapter 1 verse 5 tells us, if any of you lacks wisdom, let him what? Let him ask God. Let him ask God, who is the generous giving God, and he will give without reproach. And here at the end of verse 2 and into verse 3, James is using that as shorthand. You do not have because you do not ask. He's speaking here in a very real sense, as we are going to see. He's speaking here of the life of prayer. And he says, you ask of God and you do not receive because you ask wrongly to spend it on your passions. We're going to see this drawn out in more detail, but let me simply say this. What James is communicating here, friends, what James is communicating is that your selfishness and my selfishness, it knows no limits. The selfishness of our hearts not only causes fights and quarrels among us, but James is saying the selfishness of our hearts will lead us up the ladder to the very throne of grace to stand in the presence of the generous giving God, the one who is the Father of lights, in whom there is no shadow and variation due to change. And we will look at God, so to speak, and we will begin demanding things of him to spend it on our pleasures. Our selfishness knows no limits. If our selfishness creates quarrels and fights with our brothers and those whom we are called to love, James understands there's an infinitely bigger problem. Our selfishness will defy God himself. Our selfishness will defy God himself. The generous, giving God of all grace. And James says, this is how I know you have the sickness of selfishness. Because here's the symptoms. It's the fights and the quarrels that happen among you. And it's the greed you speak in your prayers before the one true and living God. And James says that's the spiritual diagnosis. Brothers and sisters, don't be angry this morning at James's words. Who is it that walks into a doctor's office after undergoing a full body of exams and the doctor has to give the bad news? The report's not good. You've got a disease. You've got a cancer that is going to kill you. Who gets mad at the doctor for that? How dare you diagnose me with cancer? We weep. We mourn. We look toward the remedy. Don't be angry with James this morning as he diagnoses the selfishness in each of our hearts. Because James is a pastor, James is a spiritual doctor, knows it is only in rightly diagnosing these things that he can come by the grace of Jesus Christ to prescribe the remedy. That's what James is going to do. He's going to do it. But before he does, brothers and sisters, we need worked very deeply into our spiritual consciousness. The selfishness of our hearts. Because it is the corrupting and polluting influence of this world that stains our hearts with selfishness. And we will never cherish and treasure the grace of the grace-giving God until we understand, even as Christians, how sick we truly are. Let's pray.